What does it mean? And I apologize for not putting this on my other sheet. What does it mean to be a modern person? Universalist.
Find that term.
Person who doesn't believe in boundaries. Basically, accepting of all people. How do you handle traditional loyalties? Nationalism good. Nationalist identity good. Alright, that's enough. So, take a couple minutes to discuss amongst yourself and we'll go from there. This gets to the core of what we're doing, by the way, is we're recreating to an extent what some of the early Zionists had to debate amongst themselves, and what indeed they did at various Zionist congresses. So if you can turn to the person next to you, groups of two, three, whatever, what have you.
Happy to come help. Really want to help.
Boy, I have been here already.
My personal favorite.
Oh, yeah. That's me. I had a million questions for someone.
It's four books. The first one's the only one.
Well, the rest are just pieces.
Okay. So really, it's just the first one.
Yeah, the first one's the most important one. It's not a, you know, I mean, I think, well, I shouldn't say that, because it's in the Christian Bible, I think it's more.
Right, I guess it's just avoid Christian science.
Right.
Just
fire them.
Free of action, but
it's okay. It happens.
Give me about another minute or so. All right, you guys ready? These questions have many answers. What does it mean to be a modern person?
Two.
Option two, all right.
B, or B, either one.
I'll say what you do. In certain values, morality, human rights, that kind of shared among all human beings. That can...
Sounds like universalism, too. I think that's excellent. Excellent. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Just to go to Israel.
Right. Remember, one of the things I said with the rabbis, forbidding people going to Israel wasn't that big of a deal in the Middle Ages because it wasn't that nice of a place to go. You didn't have a little Rome hotel to stay in. What?
It wasn't really.
Right. You didn't have the Rome hotel. You know, your rulers wouldn't necessarily let you emigrate or what have you. What other groups? Something else? What'd you guys come up with? And it's going to become a big debate in the Zionist circles because, in many regards, one of the questions, if you recall, that we asked in the first section, the first night, was, is Zionism something new or something old? Well, you know, the answer we came up with was both. And Zionism is really tribalism in regards. So it goes against modernism, and these were very modern people, the most well-educated people we've ever come across. It's very interesting. Modern person is pragmatic. Although many of the leaders in the modern era are not pragmatic people, they're ideologues, right? And was Obama an ideologue or a pragmatic person for pushing through healthcare? Okay.
But I think
yes.
You have to have that person and
right.
Figure out how you're
going to be. Excellent, excellent. Some other things. Say it again.
Giving up
God and/or country. And again, you know, the Zionists gave up God. Most of the early ones, not all, but most of them. But they didn't give up country. What they did is they forsook the country that they were from for a country that they hoped to have. So again, that's part of the revolution that we're going to have, that we're going to come to. Is nationalist identity good? Depends on if you win,
there
right?
There are boundaries and dimensions. It's not like a 50-50, but they're not mutually. How would we be able to motivate people to follow the laws of the land?
Okay.
A cohesive...
Terrific. All right. What else? universalist or traditional loyalties. Can I come up with anything on that?
Or
traditional loyalties.
Oh.
I did say versus, but that's...
Yeah, but they're not in opposition.
No. Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. Yeah, it's a good question.
No, because it all, to me, in that same sense, if there's some universalists and some traditionalists, it doesn't matter.
I wouldn't like universalism.
Okay. Anything else on that?
I did think that, I guess I was going with a monk, some traditions.
So you're all coming up with a blend in a lot of regards. Yeah, right.
So in that sense,
absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely, they're definitely nationalists. Right, while getting rid of what they would call tradition.
Right.
But they're definitely nationalists. Hmm?
I had the privilege of...
Stage coaches, wow. So when was that? In early 1900s?
The question of context, because I think the words, agriculture, they didn't have anarchy.
Right.
And then, large extent, rules were
great extent.
Rulers. And then, but the rise of nationalism was starting to say, well, we're going to dictate by those that share some common...
Right, we're willing to play by our rules.
Right, and so you can be in or you're out, and it's not a question of whether...
Right, although we're going to see it's more than just values. A lot of it has to do with genetics. You know,
however you find what the characteristics are. That
Fair enough. All right, anything else on these questions? Yeah.
Communication.
Well, I see what you're saying, but you can certainly be an ultra-nationalist and use those are tools, and use those tools to manipulate the situation in your favor. But I understand where you're getting that concept of universal meaning reaching everywhere. You're certainly affected, you're certainly influenced, but you can choose to reject it as well. It just depends on how hardened your ideology is. This was more of an era, what we're talking about, and we're talking about, again, the beginning of modernity, late 1700s, early 1800s. This is really an era of ideology. Right? Everybody still has an ideology or is driven by ideology. You know, it's not like today when, you know, you can watch TV for 8 hours a day and have accomplished absolutely nothing. Always involved in something at some era. You don't have the distractions. TV has probably done more than anything to destroy ideology, but that's another lecture. That's not going as fast as I am. There we go. All right.
You mastered it.
Thank you very much. All right.
PhD.
I'm not good with technology. I'm good with books. All right, another question for us. We don't have to break into discussion groups, but you did it. How do countries, particularly new ones, stake their claim to legitimacy? Now, it's an interesting question because we also live in an era when there have been a number of new countries that have come up, whether it's from the end of the Soviet Union, primarily because of that, because in Yugoslavia and what have you. But how do countries stake their claim to legitimacy? Acceptance by other countries. Acceptance. Excellent. They seek to connect themselves to the past.
We were here first.
Government. All right. And by the way, in terms of this history one, you know, if you've ever been to Rome, you know that they say we're the descendants of the Romans. May or may not be true. If you come to the United States, how does the United States in Washington, D.C. seek to claim its legitimacy? The buildings in Washington, D.C., what do they look like?
Monuments.
Not just monuments. Think of the Capitol building. Greek. The polis states from ancient Greece, you know, that were founded on those principles. Right? Everybody seeks legitimacy through history. It's not that they're ever creating anything new, even though they often are. Right? I mean, this country created something new, but yet, when it chose to design these buildings, it chose to make them look like the ones of ancient Greece. All right, anything else?
Revolution.
Language. Okay, that's... You say language. That's going to be a part and parcel characteristic of nation states. Revolution.
Breaking away from another country.
Revolution. Okay. So they set themselves up in opposition in some regards to someone or something else.
Sometimes they say, you give me something.
And in part, that's the history argument, too. Very good.
Monetary system.
Right. So these are all ways that countries stake their claim, to legitimacy. Why do they want to stake their claim to the past, by the way? Thoughts on that? We know they do it. Why do they want to do it? Jill? Absolutely. It shows legitimacy. It shows that, you know, we're not, again, like I said, we're not something new. We're entitled to be here. We are of here. We are from here. And the Zionists were going to do all of this, right? They were going to seek acceptance. from other nations. They certainly made a tie to claim to history. They set up a new government, which has, by the way, echoes of ancient governments. How many members of the Knesset are there? 120. Why 120? Anyone know? Sanhedrin. And ten times the 12 tribes. Times 10. Language, obviously, and the language was part of history for them. Certainly a revolution. They paid for it dearly. And they would have to create their own economics, which was a bit of a mess. But that's a whole other story, because it was bounded on socialist principles. All right. Here's a trickier question. What's the difference between a nation and a state? A nation is a people, and a state is the institution. Okay? There's other definitions for nation, too. We speak of the American nation, for example.
That way, the
geography. Which one's geography? State is geography, okay? Then what's the nation?
People, the
nation of Israel. Right? You talk about the people of Israel, but you know the nation is. You know the song Am Yisrael Chai, the nation of Israel lives? It's not about the people in Israel. You and I are part of the nation of Israel. A nation can be broader than the citizens of a state. You know, you look at, for example, in northern Iraq, the Kurds. The Kurds are in four or five different countries. Right? There's a Kurdish nation. There's, you know, by the way, it always amazes me. You know how many Kurds there are in the world? 40. 40 million Kurds. You know how many Jews there are?
Less.
14. 14, maybe 15 on a good day. Right? Guess who has the state? No? It's kind of, it's interesting. That's all I'm going to say. It's just interesting.
How many Menachems?
Yeah, not that many. You know, that Gibraltar is pretty small, too. Gibraltar, by the way, has the highest percentage of, outside of Israel, of Jews in a country. 20-25%. All of a couple thousand Jews there. Four synagogues. Bot was telling me about that recently. All right. You know what? Rather than dig into it, I have a whole new section to dig into. I'm going to call it for tonight, rather than dig into a new section. So when we come back next week, we're going to deal with nationalism a little more. We're going to deal with some of these abstract questions and theories of nationalism. Then we're going to talk about how modern nationalism began impacting the Jews. We're going to talk about the French Revolution. Not going to talk about the American Revolution, because there, you know, weren't that many Jews here at that point. But the French Revolution had some very significant things, particularly Napoleon. Then we're going to talk about the Enlightenment period. And we're going to wind up talking about Moschilim of the Enlightenment period. And then if we get to it, other Zions. And other Zions are other, I've talked about it in the past, other attempts to create a Jewish homeland outside of the land of Israel. And that will set the stage for when we really start digging in to Zionist thinkers. Really laid a nice stage, so thank you. Yeah?
Next week or the weekend?
Next week. No, he's just going to be here observing.
Oh, okay.
But David's not speaking, is he?
What's your definition of modernity?
My definition of modernity? I think you have to include people that have... The question really is, what does it mean to be modern? Take full advantage of technology, parent sensitive to other nationalities, and I think technology has to be included in there.
Oh, professor, does modern Jewish history? French Revolution.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Generally accepted.
Yeah,